We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
More bonus material as we turn back the clock to the 2000s. We'll hear from a couple of legendary offensive linemen on this edition of the Ziggy Cast.
This is the BGSU Ziggy Cast from Learfield, your home for Falcons updates, interviews, previews, and highlights. Now, here is your host, Todd Walker.
We continue to look at the first decade of the new millennium, a bonus edition of the Ziggy Cast. Todd Walker here with you. And on our last episode, we went all defense. On this episode of the Ziggy Cast, we're going to talk O-line with two of the best to ever play for the Orange and Brown. Both went on to long NFL careers, and we had them on the Falcon Flashback over the last few years. We're going to replay those interviews now, starting with Scott Murkowski.
We're visiting with Scott Murkowski, the former Falcon who just recently retired from the NFL after a successful seven-year run. As you look back at your Falcon career, Scott, you were part of a really good era of Falcon football. You were part of the first team for Urban Meyer and then played 4 years, all of them successful winning seasons, two of them culminating with bowl wins. As you look back on those 4 years, there sure was a lot of success for you in Orange and Brown.
Yeah, Todd, it was, I was hanging some pictures up in my basement. I have my jersey from my senior year with all our accomplishments in the 4 years we were there. And I believe we were 37-12 and had some huge road victories over the Big Ten, specifically at Purdue and at Northwestern and beating the Northwestern again in the bowls. And of course, College Game Day when we played Northern Illinois. And I mean, it's just such great memories playing at Bowling Green and how successful we were then. And, that's something I'll never forget. I have, some great memories and some great friendships from those years.
No doubt about it. There was a lot of success. And the real, I guess, aberration of your time with BGSU is there two of your 4 years you didn't even play Miami. Of course, the Red Hawks at the Dwight here today. You guys lost to them in 2001, didn't play them at all in 2002, and lost to Miami twice in 03. That was the epic year for MAC football, and you lost to him in the regular season then the MAC championship game. So the Miami rivalry was kind of sporadic for your group that graduated with you.
Yeah, they were a thorn in our side. That's no doubt about that. And you could see the success of their quarterback now in the NFL and Roethlisberger. And, you know, he was a tough guy to beat, and Miami was a tough place to play. And that year, you know, we had some great battles, but, you know, unfortunately we were on the wrong end of those battles. And, you know, those were tough games. And I remember the championship game where it was cold and muddy and just kind of, you know, it was electric at the Deutz, but we couldn't figure it out. We couldn't pull off the victory.
Well, I remember that game well. There was a blocked punt early for BG, and you guys took the lead and really had the momentum. But, you know, Miami, they were very good that season. And when you consider the way your career played out, I want you to take us back to being recruited to Bowling Green, because when you were recruited out of Cleveland Benedictine, you ended up not playing for that coach, of course, as Urban Meyer came in for your freshman year. Talk about the recruitment and your reaction when Coach Blackney was resigned, and then Coach Meyer coming in. Take us back through that time.
Yeah, recruiting was stressful for me. I went to a bunch of camps when I was coming out of high school to kind of get my name out there and show teams what I had. And Bowling Green was the only team that ended up offering me a scholarship, and that was I credited that to Coach Tim Beckman, and who's now at Illinois. And him and I have a great relationship, and he believed in me. And Coach Blackney was there at the time, and he was a great coach and a great man. And, we had a rough year that my first year there, and he decided to end his days at Bowling Green. And, you know, there's a lot of things getting said in the locker room and the guys wanting to transfer and all that good stuff. And, you know, they went out. I think it was Mr. Krebs was the AD at the time. He went out and hired Urban Meyer and came in, and, you know, we bought into what he was preaching to us. And I mean, it was hard to get through, you know, the workouts and the way he wanted us to prepare and the way he wanted us to practice. It wasn't easy. And, we bought in, the guys bought in, and then we turned the whole thing around.
No doubt you did. And when you look at that very first game under Coach Meyer and the first game that you could have played in after redshirting at Missouri, you guys won there, and was that pretty quick validation for Coach Meyer? Did that help him maybe have a little more sway with you guys because you saw such immediate success?
Well, we bought into Coach Meyer the first day he had us work out. He called it, I think it was Black Wednesday. Coach brought us into the turf room and let us have it and let us know about how he's going to run the program. And, you know, at that point, guys, some guys bowed out, some guys quit, and the guys that stuck it out reaped the benefits. And then, like you said, we went down to Missouri, and that was my first start at Bowling Green. And I think we ended up winning that game 20-13, and that was, you know, Gibby running the ball in for a touchdown. I remember that. And it was just, it was like you said, validation of the hard work that we put in and buying in and believing in what Coach Meyer had to tell us.
Scott Murkowski is our guest on the Falcon Flashback, presented by the Toledo Blade. It's BG hosting Miami today. You started your career with that win at Missouri, and you ended your career with a win down in Mobile, Alabama at the GMAC Bowl, as the offense really capped a golden era those first 4 years, those 4 years you were there, when Bowling Green just set all kinds of offensive records, that 04 season culminating with the 52-35 win over Memphis. And that year, Omar Jacobs' numbers were just really astronomical. When you look back at those two seasons in particular, 03-04, on offense, you guys had to feel you could score just about any time.
Oh, that was the goal. You know, if we were out there punting, we were disappointed. We knew we had the talent and the skill to execute what our coaches were calling. And Josh, with a combination of Josh, Omar, PJ Pope, and the wide receiving corps we had, Cole Magners and the Charles Sherrins and the Steve Sanders and James Hawkins. I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday. And we just had so much talent all over that football field. And, you know, it was hard for a defense to scheme us because we had all those weapons. And we knew that at any moment there was going to be a big play about to happen.
Scott, talk about the feeling of walking off the field a winner in your final collegiate game. I'm assuming that it was also juxtaposed with having lost to Toledo before that, but still getting the bowl bid. Just talk about what you remember leaving the field there at Ladd Peebles Stadium after winning that bowl game.
Oh, man, it was a great culmination, a great way to end a great career at Bowling Green. And we had such, mostly ups and few downs throughout the time. And remember celebrating on the field with Coach Studd, and Coach Studd played such an instrumental role in my career in college and in the NFL. And remember celebrating with him and him, his family and all my teammates, you know, collecting those awards. And I think Omar won the MVP, and just the way, you know, it just summed up what a great 4.5 years I spent at that university and around those guys in the football, you know, upstairs in the football office, the coaches I played for, the teammates I had, you know, those are just, those are memories that I'll always have for the rest of my life. And it's just, you know, it was one of those, man, just, you couldn't really take in that moment at the time, and you had to kind of reflect back on it nowadays. And it's just, you know, it was great. It was awesome. There's not much more to say. It was just absolutely incredible.
Scott Murkowski is with us on our Falcon flashback. And Scott, when you look back to your days at Bowling Green, what was your area of study, and did you earn your degree in the time there, or are you one of these NFL guys that has to go back? Talk about how the schooling side of it worked out for you.
Yeah, I ended up, I went, after that game against Memphis, I signed with an agency, and I was one credit hour short of graduation. But at the time, I thought my NFL career is in front of me, and I better take full advantage of training and getting prepared to do it. And so I did. I left school and pursued my NFL dreams, and it worked out well. And I think after my third year in the NFL, I went back and I finished my degree. I took a course at San Diego State and got my business degree from Bowling Green.
And right after Scott Murkowski left Bowling Green, another BG offensive legend stepped in to his spot and also went into the NFL for a successful career, Corey Lichtensteiger.
When you get to play football in high school, you the school brings back the program, and with a player like you at the small school level, the team got very competitive very quickly, and it wasn't long, I'm sure, before people like Bowling Green started to take notice. When did you first have some serious football offers, or at least interest, when you were in high school?
Oh, boy. Well, I started working at it early. I remember kind of doing the camp circuit when I was a freshman. I think I had a couple of high school, I guess they were, you know, they were college camps, but they were for high school kids. So I went to Ann Arbor as a freshman to the Michigan camp, and that was when I had very lofty expectations. But, you know, I probably sophomore or junior years when I started getting letters, and I remember going to a camp and getting an offer from my coach. It was one of the MAC schools, not one of the good ones, but yeah, it was probably somewhere in that junior, sophomore, junior range. I was like, oh, well, I guess this is really going to happen.
Do you recall what finally won you over to Bowling Green? Was it was it a close race between BG and somebody else? Take us back to when you made the decision. Was there some tipping point there?
Yeah, it was between Bowling Green and Miami of Ohio, believe it or not. Two very different schools, I'd say. But I think what pushed me over the edge, other than the fact that I loved the coaches at Bowling Green, there was an extreme difference between a night out on the town in Oxford and a night out on the town in Bowling Green.
Uh-huh.
And just the type of students that were there, and you know, my background from a small country town was just, I didn't see myself fitting in very well in Miamiville, Ohio. And, you know, they have a pretty appealing quarterback situation there with Roethlisberger. And, you know, kind of kicked Bowling Green around for my first year while I was being redshirted. But, you know, it turned out I wouldn't have played with him anyway. He left after his junior year. But, you know, that was kind of like the only thing that was kind of pushing me in that direction. Go ahead.
We're talking with Corey Lichtensteiger, the Falcon flashback segment, and you redshirted at Bowling Green, as you mentioned. That was 2003, and that was the first year for Coach Greg Brandon and Josh Harris, and those guys did a lot of great things. And then in 2004, you moved in and really moved into the lineup right away, and it was, I guess, the beginning of you playing guard and then later moving to center, because Falcons had Scotty Murkowski holding down the center spot your first year, so you played guard, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Coming in and playing next to Scott was pretty cool. He was one of those guys that I always looked up to, and you know, he's kind of a coach on the field, and as far as leadership on the team goes, I don't think you could beat, you know, the presence that he brought to the team. But you know, he's one of those guys you wanted to step up your game so that he approved of the way you played, and you know, you never let him down. So I think that was kind of one of the driving forces for why, you know, worked so hard early and, you know, tried to get on the field, was just trying to impress those older veterans as well as the coaching staff.
So the first game of 2004, the Falcons go down to Norman, Oklahoma, and Josh Harris is gone. Omar Jacobs is now the man, and none of us really knew what we had in Omar or what this 2004 team would end up doing. Oklahoma, I believe, was rated number 2 in the nation at the time, and obviously were very, very good. Do you remember a lot from that game, or was it just kind of a blur?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a blur, but it was a good blur. As far as, you know, just kind of getting that first start under your belt and really first college action in general. You know, before that, I think my last game would have been probably at Crestview High School, so it was quite a drastic change for me in venues. But I remember it was, you know, it was just a good, solid performance. I think we came out of that game with a lot of confidence. Like, you know, this was supposed to be one of the best teams, if not the best team in the nation. And we gave them all they could handle. Probably should have even, you know, had a chance to win that game if we would have kept up, you know, through the whole game the way we started off. But, you know, I think that was a good momentum builder for us and for our season, and to know that we had Omar, and, you know, we still had a good stable of running backs and receivers, and, you know, we were pretty loaded that season in 2004. And, you know, I think that just helped us realize that.
Corey Lichtensteiger is our guest on the Falcon Flashback. His first year, 2004, the team would begin the season 1-2, losing that opener at Oklahoma, then losing at Northern Illinois. But then the team would reel off 7 straight victories and needed a win at Toledo to get back to the MAC championship game. Unfortunately, lost that game 49-41. And, you know, 2004, the bowl situation was much different than it is in 2014. I know after that, obviously, Corey, disappointment losing to Toledo. The team had a big lead, and I would imagine you guys were sitting there thinking that might be the end of our season, right? You weren't 100% sure you'd get to go to a bowl game.
Yeah, no, you're right. It was very stressful, and kind of when you realize that game was over, like we did all this, and you know it could end with, you know, just sitting at home and watching the bowl season on television. So that was kind of a tough time to sit and wait. You know, it's one of those things you just have to deal with in sports and college football in general. But yeah, it wasn't nearly as much opportunity back then to go to a bowl game. You know, so we really had to work hard for it. But I like the way that, you know, it's shaping up lately, the way that, you know, a team can have 8 wins and be secure in a bowl game. I think that's the way it should be. That's too good of a season to not have a postseason. But, you know, back then it was stressful.
But the Falcons did get a bowl bid in 2004. The GMAC Bowl came calling, and the Falcons went down to Mobile and put a nice capper on a season that saw them go 9-3 with a 52-35 win over Memphis. And that was a game where BG's offense really started hitting on all cylinders, and the Falcons pulled away. Your first trip to Mobile, Corey, was obviously very memorable, and the team got the job done. I would imagine you have some good memories of that trip.
Yeah, I do. I think that was one of the things that was always a driving force and a motivation for us. You know, what would become the senior leaders on the team was just how much fun it was to go to a bowl game and to have an extra month, you know, an extra week in a different place, free of charge, and close to an extra month of practice time together. It's just a good way, when you have such a good season, it's a good way to, you know, cap it off and you know, celebrate with your teammates and give it one last hurrah.
And it was quite a successful GMAC Bowl, and the Falcons went into 2005 with some high hopes. And the opener at Wisconsin, that was a wild one that ended up going 56-42 Wisconsin, but Bowling Green with Omar Jacobs back, the offense was high-flying. A loss at Boise State was, maybe not a black eye, but certainly the team had a disappointing 1-2 start. And then things started to come together, but Omar Jacobs got hurt in the Western Michigan game, and that really spoiled that season. Do you remember that particular game and that incident very well?
Yeah, I do. And I remember a couple of Western Michigan games. I can't remember. That was one where we got up big, but he still got hurt. Is that the game I'm thinking?
Well, you were up early. Omar got hurt, and then Western Michigan rolled you 45-14 at the Deutsch.
Oh, okay. I'm remembering a different game then.
Yeah.
But yeah. I do remember when Omar went down, and I remember, we had so much confidence in him as a quarterback, and, he had already proven himself. And to have a leader of the team, someone who you're counting on, go down was a pretty harsh blow for us, and I do remember the rest of that season being disappointing and underperforming. And it's tough because I've been fortunate enough to keep my career going, but the college games you just don't get back. And when you have so many high hopes going into a season and the talent that we had, and just to miss out on that opportunity, it's just kind of a real shame. I do remember the disappointment of going 6-6 and still hoping for a bowl game and then not getting it and realizing you just didn't, have a good enough performance from that year to earn one.
Yeah, 2005, after Omar's injury, the Falcons then lost to Akron, did bounce back and had a chance to get back to the MAC championship game, but lost in overtime to Toledo, and that ended that season at 6-5. And then 2006, Corey Lichtensteiger, you were voted a captain for your junior season. But 2006 was clearly the worst year of the Greg Brandon years. Ended up at 4-8. That season just never really came together at quarterback, and obviously the team struggled, and that was, I'm sure, disappointing for you as a junior after all the success you'd had.
Yeah, that's what it was. I feel like that's one of those years you don't want to forget about because there were still so many good players and good friends, and you certainly try to give your all to start a season, but, I think you said it. We talk about it, the various teams that I've been on since then. And, you have to have the guys who touch the ball have to make plays. There's only so much an O-line can do. And, we didn't know that at the time. But, everybody takes a season like that hard. And, you just got to try your best to lean on your coaches, lean on your teammates. And, try to pull yourself back up, and I think we did a pretty good job of that.
2007 would be Corey Lichtensteiger's senior year, and it was a season of high highs and low lows, and it began with a high note as the Falcons beat Minnesota at the Metrodome in overtime, and many Falcon fans remember that. BG scored in OT after Minnesota had scored and decided to go for two right away. Take me back to that moment, what you remember about the Minnesota game overall, and in particular, that overtime two-point conversion that Freddie Barnes caught for the win.
Yeah. That was a pretty exciting game, to say the least. But, we had I can't remember if that was Kyler's first or second year as a quarterback, but I just remember having a lot of young guys. We didn't truly know what we had yet as far as who was taking the snaps, and quite a party for him to come out and show up like that on a big time stage. But I remember just having an opponent like Minnesota, any chance you get to play a Big Ten team or one of those major conference teams, you want to show up, you want to play with them, you want to have a shot at the end. And I think as hard as we fought that game, none of us wanted to go to overtime. You feel like when you get into a battle with an opponent that might have more depth than you, it's like you just want to take your shot, whether it fails or succeeds, you just want to take your shot and have your best chance at winning the game. So I was thrilled with the call to go for two and not drag it out any longer. And our guys showed up and made a play, and there was a lot of celebrating that night.
Yeah.
After in the locker room, on the plane flight home, it was just a great way to start off that season.
Indeed it was, and it was Tyler Sheehan's beginning as what would be a three-year run as the starting quarterback at BGSU. And Corey Lichtensteiger's with us here on our Falcon flashback. His senior year of 07 started with that overtime win at Minnesota. The next week, the Falcons played well, lost at Michigan State, then a couple of wins, and then went to Boston College. Matt Ryan and the Eagles had a very good day and beat the Falcons soundly. And then a real disappointment, the loss at Miami. The Falcons got thumped, and it looked like the season was getting away from BG. And 2 weeks later, a loss to Ohio at the Deut left the season very much in doubt. Corey, you guys were 4-4, and things weren't necessarily looking good. Can you go back to that time when subsequently you would win 4 in a row, but do you remember that midpoint of the season or 4-4 thinking maybe this wasn't going to turn out right?
Yeah, I remember that being a very trying time for us. And, you know, I think thankfully we had a good group of leaders on that team, mostly seniors, but we had a lot of good junior leadership too. And, some guys that started off in different classes didn't get redshirted, but I think we just kind of decided that we had too much pride to kind of let it all fizzle away. And I think when we looked at the schedule that we had remaining, I think it was very doable. You know, we didn't have momentum on our side, which is big in football, but you know, we did have heart. We put in, you know, a lot of us 5 years, 4 3-years for guys. And, you know, I think we just kind of decided we're going to do whatever it takes to win a couple games, win one game, win two games, and see what happens. And, you know, thankfully we were able to string four together, and, you know, winning at the right time kind of makes all the difference. So no matter how you start off, if you win a bunch in a row, I think you catch people's attention. I think we look like a pretty appealing team at the end of the year, thankfully, and we're given an opportunity to go to a bowl game.
Yeah, and that four-game winning streak culminated with a 37-10 beatdown of Toledo at the Deut. And I would imagine out of all the career highlights for Corey Lichtensteiger, that one's probably up there pretty high, right?
Yeah, I didn't beat Toledo, I don't think, until that game. And to do it at home as a senior and to make it a blowout the way we did, it was a good feeling. Probably one of the highlights of my football career, you know, I would say of all time, beating a rival and beating them that way. And, you know, just you just have such bad feelings about a team that you never seem to, you know, you never feel like you could beat them. Like whenever it would be a close game, I feel like the ball would always bounce their way, and we'd end up on the short end of the stick. And it was just nice to have that reversed and to have it mean a lot as far as what it meant for postseason stuff too.
And the Falcons did get another bowl invite. They're second in the 4 years that Corey Lichtensteiger played with the Falcons. They went back to Mobile in the GMAC Bowl against Tulsa. Unfortunately, it was, frankly, it was just an awful performance. And I just remember how bad I felt for you, Corey, and some of your other seniors that year. I mean, that was a good senior class. I remember Sean O'Drobinak, Pete Winovich was part of that group. Drew Nystrom was up there on the O-line with you, and Kevin Huelsman, a guy out of St. Henry, was on that O-line. That unfortunately was a tough way to end your career.
Yeah, it was. I don't have too many good memories from that game itself. Obviously, the trip down was fun, and, you know, it was just kind of a got out of control that game. Couldn't get anything going. I don't know, for whatever reason. We just didn't bring our A game that night. I think they were a good team. We're out to prove something and had it in their minds that they were going to beat us pretty bad, and they certainly did.
Well, after that, then, Corey Lichtensteiger, after 5 years at BGSU, you were in the position where the NFL was a possibility, and you continued to work. And then following April, the draft came, and the Denver Broncos called your name, and you ended up with then Mike Shanahan in Denver. Take me back to that day, the draft, the process of being drafted, and the excitement around it for you.
Yeah, it all kind of happened really fast after the season was over. you know, we had such a late bowl game, and, you know, went to Nashville to train for the combine, did the combine, did the Senior Bowl. You know, you wait around for a little bit to see if, you know, kind of the hard work that you put in college in the last few months leading up to that payoff. And I decided I was going to, you know, just have close family. And I think Nystrom was one of my only friends that was there at my grandparents' lake house in Coldwater, Michigan. And didn't have the TV on. They didn't even have cable at that point, so we weren't watching the draft. I didn't want to have to sit there and see, you know, one center, two center, four centers taken before me and, you know, start freaking out. So I just decided have fun and try to relax and, you know, not think about it too much. And then I got the call from the Broncos and talked to the coach for a little bit, talked to the media for a little bit, hung up the phone and just started thinking, you know, I have like 2 weeks and I have to be in Denver and, you know, life's going to change completely. And it was exciting and scary. And, you know, I had my wife and my one son at the time to think about, like, you know, a lot's going to change for our family. We've been living in a little apartment in Bowling Green for so long, and now we got to, you know, pack up and move to Denver and have a whole lot of different opportunities presented to us. But, you know, so it was just a bunch of different emotions, you know, but I'd say exciting was probably the main one.
Great to hear from Corey Lichtensteiger and Scott Murkowski on this bonus edition of the Ziggy Cast. We'll have another edition of the Ziggy Cast coming up soon. Until then, this is Todd Walker saying, "I Ziggy Zumba."
Thanks for listening to the BGSU Ziggy Cast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review however you listen. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.